Hi, this is Bridget with the Boston Sun, April 10th, 2026. EA marks 25 years of stewarding Esplanade. By Dan Murphy. Since incorporated 25 years ago, the Esplanade Association, EA, has actively stewarded its namesake park, which now attracts around 4 million visitors annually. And that number is only expected to grow when the Esplanade soon becomes a year-round destination. On February 10, 2001, longtime Beacon Hill resident Linda Cox and then Back Bay resident Gerald Oristaglio formally launched EA. The organization evolved from a joint committee founded in 1997 of the Neighborhood Association of the Back Bay and the Beacon Hill Civic Association. The ad hoc group's founders first turned for guidance to Henry Lee, who had established the Friends of the Public Garden in 1970, to work in close collaboration with the City of Boston to protect, preserve, and enhance the Public Garden, Boston Common, and the Commonwealth Avenue Mall. But unlike the parks that the Friends of the Public of the Public Garden stewards with the city, the Esplanade is on state-owned land, so Cox and Oristaglio sought to establish a like-minded organization to work closely with the Department of Conservation and Recreation to help protect and preserve the Esplanade. Cox and Oristaglio were the real heroes who believed neighbors and community support could make changes at a point when the Commonwealth didn't have the funds to make repairs and create the amenities that would bring more people to this green space, said Jen Mergel, executive director of EA, during a recent phone call. They called on their friends to roll up their sleeves and show the community what we could do together. EA began as an all-volunteer effort and remained that way until 2005, when the organization made its first hire for the position of volunteer coordinator. Today, the organization comprises a team of over 16 employees. In the first year, 2001, EA raised $250,000 in donations, noted Mergel. While a quarter of a century later, the organization has raised over $30 million in park investments donations to date. All of it is thanks to the individuals, organizations, and foundations who believed in supplementing our state park with the amenities that bring people the benefits they deserve, said Mergel. In 2001, EA completed its maiden project in the park, the design and construction of Stoneman Playground, located between Fairfield Street and Massachusetts Avenue. And since this initial undertaking, EA has overseen and completed numerous other notable projects in the park, including the opening of its first universally accessible playground for all abilities last August. The $2 million Gronk Playground, made possible by a donation from four-time Super Bowl champion Rob Gronkowski via his Gronk Nation Youth Foundation, GNYF, along with additional contributions from the EA and DCR, is located in the oldest part of the Esplanade, an area of the park that was once home to the first free gym in North America, named Charles Bank by designer Frederick Law Olmsted. The site has great DNA for bringing the past forward and for bringing a next generation to the Esplanade, said Mergel. With the imminent opening of the adjacent Charles Bank campus and its year-round Smith Family Pavilion on 2 acres of underused parkland, the Esplanade is poised to become an even more popular destination in the near future. It's definitely our biggest and absolutely our most transformational project, although it's not our longest-running project, said Mergel of the estimated more than $20 million endeavor. For park visitors, the opening of the Esplanade's new Charles Bank campus will make their experience significantly more comfortable and convenient, since in the past they needed to step outside the Esplanade to use a restroom, purchase a refreshment, or even just find respite from inclement weather, from about mid-October through mid-April. The opening of the Charles Bank campus, with capacity to host a temporary murals, sculptures, and other visual installations, will allow more opportunities for the future expansion of EA's public art program. Since 2017, we've loved inviting artists to make the park more joyful and inspiring, and to make the area that may feel neglected into focal points that brighten people's day, said Mergel. Highlights of its public art program to date have included commissioning murals that transformed an overpass ramp, electrical boxes, and pump houses, i.e. structures used to regulate water drainage, from cement blocks covered with graffiti to public art installations that delight passers-by in the park and on Storo Drive, according to EA. The group now intends to expand the mural program to the Charles Bank campus, where EA's lease allows for exhibits, said Mergel, and they are currently sharing several artists' proposals for new work with their colleagues from DCR, before presenting for review with the City of Boston. Along with recreation, education, and park stewardship, we are excited for the Charles Bank campus to also become a cultural destination, similar to how it was enjoyed across interests as in Olmsted's day, said Mergel. Besides the introduction of new visual art into the space, the Charles Bank campus will also be home to a smaller at-grade outdoor stage, which can complement the larger elevated hatch shell stage to offer more frequent and impromptu performances in the park. Meanwhile, EA remains committed to protecting the park's ecology over the long term via climate-conscious initiatives, such as the launch of its Lasting Esplanade Arbor Fund, LEAF, initiative in 2019, and the publication of the first version of its Climate Action Plan in June 2024. We have been documenting and advancing the ongoing health of the Esplanade's tree canopy through our tree management succession plan and set up LEAF so more people can support the care of 1,900 trees that are so vital, not just for the atmosphere of Riverfront, but also for downtown Boston, said Mergel. And especially with the construction of the pavilion and campus, EA has remained committed to not only building and designing environmentally friendly structures, but also adhering to strict green building practices. New features like a rain garden for stormwater filtration and rain barrel for watering 40 new trees will not only be a light footprint, but also improve the health of the park, added Mergel. Asked to consider EA's countless achievements over the years, Mergel points to the restoration of the hatch shell oval lawn as one of its unsung accomplishments. In June of 2015, EA celebrated the opening of the newly restored hatch shell oval lawn, which cost an estimated $700,000 and was 100% privately funded through money raised by the group. While most visiting the hatch focused on the stage, many don't know what keeps that lawn under them green and thriving. It's like we're laying out a picnic blanket to make a nice space for people to come and have an enjoyable experience in the park, said Mergel. EA also partnered with DCR and Community Boating Incorporated, a nonprofit sailing program based on the Charles River, to help rebuild its docks in 2011. 3 years later, EA reopened the revitalized Charles Elliott Memorial, located next to the community boating docks. We turned an important but overlooked memorial into beautiful garden destination, said Mergel, noting that Elliott was a 19th century American landscape architect who was instrumental in creating the Metropolitan Park system of Greater Boston, including the Esplanade. Looking ahead, EA is now working in concert with DCR, the Emerald Necklace Conservancy, and the Charles Gate Alliance to advocate for designs that reclaim a pedestrian and bicycle routes between the Emerald Necklace and Charles River Esplanade, which was lost a half century ago as a result of the construction of the Bowker Overpass. In recognition of its collaborative work to reclaim this land, EA, along with the Charles Gate Alliance and Emerald Necklace Conservancy, was recently awarded the prestigious Activist Award at the 60th annual meeting of the Charles River Watershed Association. In a separate undertaking, EA is also now in the exploratory phase for the reconstruction of the stone steps leading to Commissioner's Landing, which was designed in the 1930s by venerable American landscape architect Arthur Shercliffe. Mergel noted that the steps, which she described as a character-defining feature of the landmarked Esplanade landscape, have been shut off to the public for decades, and that their reconstruction has long been championed by EA's co-founders as one of the longest-running projects in EA's history. Reflecting on all that EA has achieved in its first 25 years, Mergel chalks up the group's many successes to its strong emphasis on teamwork and collaboration. "It's really edifying to work on a great team with great people," said Mergel. "We have an exceptionally dedicated board and staff who love working with DCR. So many people have made so much happen over the years." EA has forged many meaningful partnerships over the years, Mergel noted, including those with other larger and smaller organizations. For example, the Museum of Science and Mass General Hospital in BU, and West End Museum and Hill House and Community Boating, among others, as well as with local elected officials, including Representative Jay Livingstone and City Councilor Sharon Durkin. "At the Esplanade Association, our mission is geographically specific but intentionally inclusive," said Mergel. "While we focus on 64 acres of landmarked landscape, we know we can have a much broader impact on Greater Boston and the Commonwealth by inviting more people from more places to benefit from our iconic downtown Boston riverfront. Visit https://esplanade.org/ways-to-give to support EA, or visit esplanade.org for more information on the organization. Family ties to cancer push Southend man to run his first Boston Marathon, by Julia Hendler. When Joe Whitney steps into the starting line on April 20th, he already knows what will carry him through the race. Whitney, a dentist, was raised in Marlborough, Massachusetts, and has spent the last decade living in Boston's South End. This spring, the 38-year-old is running the Boston Marathon for the first time as part of the Dana-Farber Marathon Challenge Team. Whitney lost both parents to cancer. His father, Robert, was diagnosed with bile duct cancer while Whitney was in dental school, and spent nearly a decade in treatment at Dana-Farber Cancer Institute before passing away in January 2023. His mother, Kristen, and both of his older sisters, Sarah and Blair, have Cowden syndrome, a rare genetic disorder that significantly elevates the risk of developing multiple cancers and requires lifelong monitoring, Whitney said. Kristen was diagnosed with stage 4 endometrial cancer last summer and passed away in December, while Whitney had already begun his marathon training. A Mass native and runner since high school, Whitney said running the Boston Marathon has always been on his bucket list. "When the opportunity came to run for Dana-Farber," he said, "it just felt on the nose. Raising some money for an organization such as this felt like I had some control in the situation in a time where I didn't feel like I had much control in my life, Whitney said. Since its founding in 1990, DFMC has raised over $140 million for cancer research and care at Dana-Farber, according to the organization's website. This year, more than 500 runners are participating, making it the largest charity group in the race. Jessica Abbott, the assistant vice president of the Jimmy Fund, the fundraising division of Dana-Farber, said the team is made up of cancer survivors, current patients, family members, and friends. You can really connect with someone on a different level when they've been through something similar, or a loved one had a similar diagnosis, she said. DFMC has created such a sense of community. All funds raised through DFMC directly supports the Claudia Adams Barr Program, which funds early-stage cancer research, Abbott said. The program provides researchers with the resources to test innovative ideas, which can advance clinical applications and the results necessary to seek additional federal funding. As federal cancer research funding has declined over the years, Abbott said, philanthropy is essential to filling that gap. It's so critical to advancing the research, Abbott said. When his mother passed, Whitney and his family included his fundraising link in her obituary, and donations poured in. Whitney said he was blown away very quickly by the level of support he received and has far surpassed his initial fundraising goal, according to his DFMC page. I'm just one person on a team that has hundreds of people on it, Whitney said. The strength in this team is unmatched. It's a pretty cool group of people. With his office 60 miles out of Boston, Whitney said his training consists mostly of late weeknight runs after his two young daughters are in bed. The detail-oriented dentist in him, Whitney said, has come out in full force as he gets closer to race day. He tracks his splits, monitors his heart rate, and pays close attention to his diet. When he crosses the starting line, though, he said he plans to let go of the numbers. I'm definitely going to be thinking of my parents the whole time, he said. If something's hard, I just think of them. Hoffer looks to continue progress as Kingsley's new head of school. By Ryan Owens. When students arrive at Kingsley Montessori School next fall, they will be greeted by a familiar person at the front door, Tara Hoffer. Hoffer, the associate head of the school since 2024, will become the new head of school in July. She will succeed Steve Farley, who has had the position for 8 years. Hoffer said in an interview she is grateful for the opportunity and plans to continue the work done by Farley. Kingsley is an independent school in the Back Bay that serves more than 300 students, from toddlers to sixth graders. The school's board of trustees selected Hoffer as the new head of school. Hoffer said being the head of school will give her an opportunity to connect more effectively with the Kingsley community, including students, their families, faculty, and staff. The educators here at Kingsley are really special, Hoffer said. That is seen and felt in small and large ways. How they show up every day at 7 a.m. to lesson plan, to prep materials, to create classroom spaces that are warm, inviting, and educational, to the thought and care that they demonstrate in conversations for supporting children. Hoffer recounted when she first interviewed for a position at Kingsley in May 2015. It was unseasonably hot, and she had just moved to Boston from Maryland. As she waited for the interview, she said she noticed a group of students using the school's community space. She was shocked to learn the children were discussing a presentation on World War II artillery. I just remember sitting down there, hearing this child give this incredibly articulate presentation on this incredibly sophisticated content, and thinking to myself, where am I? Hoffer said in an interview. What is this place? What is happening here? That was Hoffer's first introduction to the Montessori style of education, which emphasizes collaboration and hands-on learning while providing a sense of unity through multi-age classrooms. We value helping students become innately curious, independent thinkers, learners, and leaders, Hoffer said. The environment is a huge part of how we provide that experience for children. Hoffer got the job. Her Kingsley journey started in technology innovation, sharing what would later become known colloquially as the fun office with the two physical education teachers. I've known Tara from day one, said Josh Squire, one of the physical education teachers who has worked at Kingsley for 27 years. I used to consider myself like the mayor of whatever community I'm in. Squire and Hoffer became quick friends, a habit Hoffer repeated through the years. As she moved up the ranks at Kingsley over the past 8 years, she was promoted to various leadership positions, including serving as director of the upper elementary school, becoming the associate head of school, and being selected in the top position. She grew in each position, she said, especially during the turbulent times such as the global pandemic. She brings such grace to moments of change, and she brings space to hearing others' input, making room for anxieties, making room for tough, unresolved pieces of conversation, and finding solutions in a collaborative manner, said performing arts teacher Diana Galanakis. That's kind of the soul, the essence of what Tara brings to leading. Laura Mendelson, an early education teacher at Kingsley, said Hoffer has an enthusiasm in the classroom that bleeds into her administrative roles as well. Even as Hoffer transitioned to becoming an administrator, she continued to keep a foot in the classroom, Mendelson said. It's easy to get caught up in the meetings and being with adults all day, but she really stays grounded and connected to the students. Squire said he is confident Hoffer is the right person to lead Kingsley. I've seen a bunch of administrators go through, and Hoffer, to me, toes the best line between what's best for families, teachers, and students, Squire said. Hoffer said she is ready to start her new role. I am a work in progress, all minutes, all hours of all days, Hoffer said. I think there is an intentionality to my own trajectory that I believe is also mirrored in the intentionality with which we do everything here at Kingsley. And I love what I do. I love it. District D4 sees 6% drop in Part 1 crime from last year, by Dan Murphy. At the first quarter of 26 was drawing to a close, District D4 had experienced a 6% drop in Part 1 crime, i.e. incidents of violent and property crime, from last year, according to Boston Police. Between this January 1st and March 29th of this year, 689 incidents of Part 1 crime were reported in the district, which includes the Back Bay, South End, Lower Roxbury, and the Fenway, compared with 734 during the same time frame in 2025. This year also marked a more than 6% decrease in Part 1 crime from the district's 5-year average of 648 incidents. One homicide was reported in this district this year, as opposed to none last year, while 0.4 was the district's 5-year average for this crime category. Rapes and attempted rapes were down slightly in the district as the number dropped to 6 from 5 last year. The district's 5-year average was 5.6 incidents for this category. Robberies and attempted robberies in the district were down around 31% as the number fell to 20 from 29 last year, while the district's 5-year average for this category was 23.8 incidents. The district's rate of domestic aggravated assaults remained steady, with 10 incidents reported both this year and last. This was down from the district's 5-year average for the category of 11.4 incidents. Incidents of non-domestic aggravated assault were down almost 20% as the number dropped to 33 from 41 last year. The district's five-year average was 41.2 incidents for this category. Commercial burglaries in the district were up more than 38%, with the number climbing to 18 from 13 last year. The year's five-year average was 15 incidents for this category. Likewise, residential burglaries in the district were up 50%, as the number spiked to 18 from 12 last year. The district's five-year average was 18 incidents for this category. Incident of larceny from a motor vehicle decreased 51%, with the number dropping to 46 from 93 last year. The district's five-year average was 85.8 incidents for this category. Other larcenies in the district increased nearly 4%, as the number climbed to 523 from 505 last year. The district's five-year average is 415.2 incidents for this category. Incidents of auto theft in the district dropped 50%, with the number falling to 15 from 25 last year. The district's five-year average was 31.2 incidents for this category. Citywide, Part 1 crime was down 5% as the number dropped to 3,379 from 3,540 incidents last year, while the five-year average for Part 1 crime across the city was 3,475 incidents. Okay, that's all the time that we have for today. Thank you.